And welcome to the AV Forums Hi-Fi podcast for Monday, the 4th of March. And in this edition, I'm joined by Hi-Fi editor Ed Selly. Good afternoon, Ed.
Hello, sir. How are you?
And our special guest today is not the John Williams, but the John Williams from Peter Tyson.
Thanks for having me.
So what we're doing this week, we're looking at the Bristol show. Now, we try not to do time-sensitive stuff on the podcast, so you can drop in at any point. But Bristol is the biggest hi-fi show. It has been for well over 20-odd years now, or are we hitting 30 years, Ed? It's getting close to 30 years,
there were people at the show on their late 20th Bristol show. Mm. Mine was my 20th.
Right.
So, yeah, I think it has to be. There must have been at least one grizzled veteran who's done 30 of the damn things.
Must be. It's getting very close to that if it isn't already over the 30. And there's a lot of people downsizing. There's a lot of people getting into hi-fi at the minute. So how do you actually get started with hi-fi this year? And is it as simple as it used to be? Or, is it a lot more complicated now with streaming services and crossover products and all that kind of thing? And what do you buy first? Well, we're going to discuss all of that today on this podcast. And we're no longer live streaming the podcast. So if you've got any questions, then the best way to get them answered is to find this podcast on AV Forums. So if you head to the forum list, all the way to the bottom, you'll find the AV Forums podcast forum. Go in there, find this episode. It'll be the 4th of March episode. Click on it and put your question in there. And Andy, our podcast producer, goes through and he collates all of those. And we've got some Q&As coming up. So if you've got questions, then put them there. Or you can do it the old-fashioned way, email podcast@avforums.com. And that's how you get your questions to us. So, like I say, these are now pre-recorded, but because of that, we can guarantee that you have a podcast every Monday going forward. So any Monday you fancy listening to a podcast, there will be an AV Forums podcast, whether it's hi-fi, TV, home AV, or we also have two movies podcasts, TV and movies, and 4K and Blu-ray. And where the month has a fifth Monday, you'll find a games podcast as well. So keep tuned to AV Forums. And one other important thing is that this no longer appears on the main AV Forums YouTube channel. It's actually on the AV Forums podcast YouTube channel. So if you don't want to miss any episodes going forward, then head over there and subscribe to that channel. So who are we? Well, AV Forums is one of the largest AV and hi-fi communities on the interweb. We've been around a very long time. We started in 2000 and the editorial started in 2003. So we like to think that we know a bit or two about the subject. And my name is Phil Hinton. I am the editor of the site. I have been for the last 20 years and I cover everything on TVs to hi-fi and AV and all sorts. And I make the videos and all that kind of thing. So Ed is also here. Ed's our hi-fi editor. But briefly, just tell us a little bit about yourself, Ed.
Yes, I have assumed the role of hi-fi editor for AV Forums, but I lead a fairly sort of varied existence. I am a freelancer as well. I write for a number of other publications, as well as doing consultancy work in the industry, which I've now been resident in for a slightly alarming 23 years. So effectively I have covered multi-channel in the past, but these days I am strictly two channel, reflecting the increase in both its importance to AV Forums and the fact that it's sort of come back from the dead in the time that I've been doing this. Just as a very brief aside for people watching this video, the lighting that I've got going on today is not simply for stylistic purposes. One of the souvenirs I picked up from the Bristol show is an alarming red and thoroughly unpleasant looking eye. So I've lit myself in such a way that I look less like a John Carpenter prop. So that's why.
At least you're not wearing the Phantom of the Opera mask, Ed.
Oh, mate, if it came to it, I'd go like the bloke in Airwolf, just, you know, with one lens blacked out. But I'm hoping not to lose the eye. I've got to be honest, it's not on my list of things to do. Yeah. But in case you're wondering why I look like I do, normally I have a ring light and I can actually light both sides of my face. On this instance, I didn't think that was a terribly good idea. So that's why things are like they are today.
Okay, so that's Ed. And like I say, our special guest today is John. John, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm John. I work for Peter Tyson as their digital content manager. So I create and edit all of the YouTube videos. And all the social media videos and things for the marketing department. My background, I've done sales and management. I had a 16-year or so career with Bang & Olufsen through various dealerships and roles and other specialist audio brands. And now here I am.
Excellent. And if you want to check out the Peter Tyson YouTube channel, go check that out, because you'll see John introducing you to lots of different products. And of course, one of the benefits of being a retailer, John, is that you get these products nice and
early. Oh, yeah, it's the access. People. Yeah, it is. I mean, I used to do it for Bang & Olufsen videos, but, you know, it's very limited what you can do with that. But now I've got access to all these fantastic brands and all these products. It's absolutely brilliant.
Mm. Yeah. And if nobody knows Peter Tyson, online business is probably what you know them best for, but they've been around since 1966. So family business, still is a family business, John.
Still is absolutely right? Is, yeah.
Yeah. And you'll find everything from entry level white goods, hi-fi TVs and all that kind of thing, up to, I believe you have a Lynn system there that's worth well over 100,000.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're one of the biggest Lynn dealerships in the world. Yeah, we have 360s there. We have the Solo 800 amplifiers that have just come out there. We've got a Newcastle branch as well. They have some really serious hi-fi stuff there. It's a cool place.
Yeah. Well, welcome on to the podcast.
Thank you.
We'll get your expertise and knowledge going ahead today. But before we do all of that, Ed's going to tell us about a current competition that we've got running.
Yes, you can win a Valencia Tuscany XL Ultimate Luxury Onyx Cinema Seat. Christ, you don't want to say that too quickly, do you? It's worth over £2,200. Provided with this superb prize by Valencia Theatre Seating, and you can win the thing by heading over to avforums.com/competitions to enter. It's open to eligible AV Forums members over 18 who are resident in the UK. So basically, if you're a member and you're not Phil, because he's not allowed to, you can win it. And it's been a while since I've seen one of these for real, but they are serious seats for kicking back.
Yeah,
so that's all good. We don't have previous winners at the moment. There will be previous winners in the fullness of time because some competitions have come to an end. But we do have a new patron in Jaimeen Desai and Aquadulce. Apologies if that's incorrect, has bought us a coffee. So thank you both for coming on board.
No, thank you. Thank you very much for your support, guys. It really is appreciated. One day we may actually create a good podcast. So all your funds and all your support is very generous and it is welcome. Thank you very much. Right. So before we get into today's subjects, we need to do Q&A. We need to answer some of the questions that were posed from the last podcast, which was the 5th of February. So, John, if you don't mind, our first one comes from Nicholas Watkins 5459 via YouTube. What did Nicholas have to say?
Nicholas has to say, I have a pretty decent hi-fi system, but the balance of spending has been more into the amplification and less on the speakers. To be fair to the speakers, they have improved greatly with upgraded amplification. I'm just curious, what is Ed's take on the balance of spending on amplification versus speakers? I know somewhere that the speakers are the most important, so I'd be curious to know your thoughts.
This feels like an open manhole cover of a question.
It really does.
I am both old enough and been involved with certain brands for long enough that the idea of the speakers costing significantly more than the electronics still is a bit of an anathema for me. But if I actually take a step back and view the situation as it is in 2024, I do think you can, generally speaking, afford to spend more on loudspeakers as a proportion of the total system than it has been the case, I think, before. If you want an extreme example of it, the Kudos Titan 505s that live here to assist me with review work, they are used, essentially, they are used on both a Cord Electronics integrated amplifier, which is roughly commensurate in price, but they're also used routinely on a Cambridge Audio Edge, which is, you know, about £3,000-£4,000 less than the Kudoses. And I've had great results out of the Kudoses on amplifiers at the £2,500 to £3,000 point. And there's a lot to be said that you would get a big chunk of what the Kudos would do on substantially less expensive amplification. And I believe that that is replicated quite reliably all the way down to fairly base levels. So long as you have power and current delivery sufficient to meet what the speaker requires, it doesn't necessarily need to cost as much as the speaker does. However, in certain situations and certain partnerships, you will find that throwing a bit more money at the problem can yield extremely good results. Just going back to Lin for Tysons. I mean, obviously their flagship amplifier is now £75,000 for the pair of them, or is it maybe slightly more than that?
No, that's right. Yeah.
That's more than the speakers are. Yeah. And that's very much Lin's take on how it should be and possibly will forever be. So certain companies have got their own, you know, fairly keenly held beliefs on this. But I, you know, my take on that, and I will be interested to see what John's thoughts on this are. My take on this is that position has softened a bit over the years.
I think you're right. And you're right. Yeah. Mentioning Lin there, Lin's entire philosophy is source first.
Yeah,
the amount of engineering that goes into just the source, because it will improve greatly any set of loudspeakers. And I'm sort of in the middle with it, to be fair. It all comes down to what system you're matching and what you're doing and your preference, because it's all subjective at the end of the day. Personally speaking, I tend to go source and amplifier first, and then the speakers is the last upgrade, because it's that old thing of rubbish in, rubbish out. But like you say, speakers are improving greatly. Amplification is improving greatly. We'll move on later to, you know, all-in-one systems versus full separate hi-fis and the difference that can make. But it's an interesting topic that there will never be a definitive answer.
No.
I think my best advice for it is try it for yourself. See which you think gives the biggest difference. Try a different set of speakers, then try a different amplifier on your speakers and see which one makes the biggest difference for you. Because it's going to be different each time.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment.
So this is something we're definitely going to get into a bit more today, because we're talking about building a system. So thank you very much for the question, Nicholas. Hopefully that answered that. We've got one other question. Licensed Taximan, he's a regular listener and viewer. Welcome along. Good to see you again. So, John, what did he have to say?
He says, with regards to digital inputs, my old Denon AVC A11XV, which is just replaced with the Denon AVCX 8500, primarily for Atmos and DTSX, had digital outputs as well as inputs. One was coaxial and the other was optical. So if I wanted to copy a few tracks from a CD, as I didn't like or want all the tracks from that original disc from my CD player to my CD recorder, I did the transfer via the AV amp. Most, if not all, AV amps, or I believe straight stereo amps, no longer have those digital outputs. It just makes transferring tracks from CD to CDR a bit more awkward. So apart from the loss of THX Ultra 2 certification, which the majority of AV amps now have stopped, which is no big deal, it's those outputs.
Yeah, this, I have to be honest, is the first time I've heard anyone actually making use of these outputs in a very, very long time. And that's reflected in the fact that they're not on there. If I wanted to take a couple of tracks off a CD, I've got a USB CD-ROM drive, I've got software on this laptop, and I take the tracks I want. It doesn't have to be done in real time. It doesn't take very long time, and they go back down onto the drive when the CDR is on it. It's loop throughs and digital outputs on AVRs and other devices substantially less common than they used to be, because for the most part, as a recording monitor, it's just not something we do. The only time I ever encode anything to digital in real time is on the incredibly rare occasions I can be motivated to rip a piece of vinyl. Which I've had to do recently because I bought records which do not have any form of CD release. So they're not on streaming services, and I'd forgotten what a colossal ball ache it is. For the most part, if you're just going to need a couple of tracks off, get a USB CD-ROM and do it via PC, because it will take you less time. The results will be exactly the same and you won't miss those outputs on the AVR.
Yeah, and we're definitely going to come back to this subject in future podcasts, and covering those legacy outputs that no longer exist and what's replaced those and how life is, in some cases, easier, in some cases, a bit more difficult. We're going to come and cover that a little bit later on. But that's the Q&A done with. So thank you very much for your questions, guys. Get them in, keep them coming. Podcast at avforums.com on the email. Or like I say, go to avforums and ask your question in the podcast thread. Or if you're watching on YouTube, down below in the comments. And like I say, Andy collates all those for the next Hi-Fi podcast, and we'll ask the questions and give you the answers. Right, so moving on to our main subjects today. The first one is the Bristol Show Roundup. And the Bristol Show, like we said right at the beginning, it's been going for about 30 years now, if not longer. I certainly used to be a regular there back in the day, probably around about, I think it was the 20th anniversary that we were there with AV Forums. We've been a few years.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
It was at the time of 3D TV, if I remember correctly. And we also did the Pioneer Kuro calibration side by side plasmas and all that. So that gives you an idea how long ago that was. Now it's no longer the Sound and Vision show, is it, Ed? It's very much a two channel show. And
yeah,
is that because of that's where the industry's gone back to? We've kind of done the AV thing and now we're coming back to the middle again?
It's not. That's an overstatement. There are a number of dealers across the length and breadth of the UK and indeed across the wider world who are still doing seriously impressive things with AV and multi-channel. It's still a big part of what they do. However, they are specialists doing what they do, doing it well. It used to be that you had sort of dealers, you know, dealers where they didn't have a foot in any particular camp. They're less and less common because it's hard work maintaining the level of, you know, level of expertise and level of skill to get all of those different aspects correct. In specifics to Bristol, one of the dealers which does a lot less AV, sorry, for the people not watching the video, I have been joined by ACAT, and I think
he's now the star of the show, to be
fair. It's only going to be a matter of time before he appears in one of the actual product videos. The Bristol show is an Audio T based event. An Audio T has, I mean, you can still buy multi-channel product from Audio T, but it is simply not a significant part of their work. Now, this means that going to the effort of bringing a big AV system to a dealer who's, you know, you can order it on the day and it'll probably get fulfilled, but it's not a big part of what they do. So you're off to a demotivating start. And then it's in a hotel. It's not an easy space, especially in a world of spatial audio, to get a meaningful demonstration of what the system can do. You know, in past years, certain companies have gone to enormous lengths to do it, you know, bringing scaffold rigs so speakers are over the head. And it's an enormous investment in time, money, and something often going bang on the day. So, you know, people have sort of moved away from that. Because if you haven't got the demand for it, going to the effort of doing it becomes counterproductive. And as reliable as it always is, there's always a comment in either the preview thread or the show report that there should be a show that really gives AV the treatment it deserves. I don't necessarily disagree with that. I simply don't know where it would be done effectively. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, the when it comes down to it, if someone made the effort to get that together, all the people who have written in and been saying this over the years, I don't care how far you have to travel. If you want it to happen more than once, you need to go. There's no,
that is the problem with these types of shows and so on. Yeah. So leaving AV to one side, Ed, what were the highlights this year?
First, before we do very specific products, the one thing that was interesting was a couple of brands that are usual regulars at the show did not attend. So Bowes & Wilkins didn't attend. Arcam didn't attend, which is very peculiar because it's not that like Harman didn't attend, because JBL brought some stuff along and had their usual room upstairs on one of the upper floors. And Henley Audio, who do Project, Musical Fidelity and so on and so forth, they took the decision not to. Their claim is that they don't have anything significantly new that they wanted to show. So we'll take that as it is. With this, the reason I bring this up is it meant that there were certain rooms that have been block booked since time immemorial that became available. Now, one company that did benefit from this enormously, and, you know, we've talked about them already on this podcast, was Lynn. Lynn went from using an upstairs room where they normally take a relative, you know, it's not an inconsequentially expensive system. Lynn and Bargain Basement just doesn't exist. But what they did is they took the opportunities of their 50th year to bring a big system, all the trimmings, the Johnny Ive influenced LP12, the new power amplifiers. It was a full fat spec system in a big room, and it is by far and away the most impressive demonstration of Lynn equipment I've had at a show ever. I'll do the superlatives there. I'll give you the definitive. I have not heard a Lynn system sound better than that. I mean, don't get me wrong, it was not money you lose down the back of the sofa, but it was exceptionally good. So that was an interesting sort of starting point. I mean, the power amplifiers were new. It's possibly the first time that most of us are ever going to see an LP1250 in the flesh. You know, it looks jolly nice. I don't necessarily know if it's how I'd spend that money, but anyway. So that was extremely impressive. In terms of new things, A couple of things I think are of great relevance to AV forums. PMC has taken the wraps off active modules for their 25i and 20 series speakers. So they actually work in both the current and the preceding generation of speakers. If you've got the 21, 22, 23 or 24, you can, and I'm using the word you deliberately because you can buy the module and do this yourself. And as a sneak preview, I am negotiating with PMC that when we review a set of these, they will supply them as passive, and I, a man with my fists of ham and very limited mechanical understanding, will endeavour to fit the active modules, and I will report back to you just how well that goes.
I believe in you, Ed.
Well, I'm glad that somebody does. It's a really clever idea. You can buy the active speakers from dealers as fitted, but the idea of being able to retrofit, if you want to then change how your system functions, I think that's extremely clever. What's equally brilliant is that one module, I always wondered why the little PMC stand mounts have got this socking great metal plate on the back of them. It made no sense. It was an expensive item to fit if you didn't have to fit it, but it means that their crossover plates are the same size on all four speakers, and you just slap the same module in. It's got four outputs. You choose the one that you want, and away it goes. Very, very clever, very impressive, really sort of joined up thinking. Additional to that, and I stress at this point that the full show report is on the site, so I'm not going to list all of these things. Riga has taken the wraps off a new flagship pre-power amplifier. It looks absolutely superb. It's going to be about £6,000 a box, so, you know, not giving it away, but in the context of where we are in pricing in 2024, it's not unreasonably priced. That looked fantastic. They also have a new top-of-the-range moving magnet cartridge, and I have every suspicion that they're going to sell bucket loads of them when that goes on sale next year. There's a new EPOS speaker, smaller than the one that we awarded an Editor's Choice badge to. We awarded the Editor's Choice badge the ES14. This is the 8. It's almost a cube in shape, and you could argue it's not the prettiest thing at the show, but my word, it sounded absolutely brilliant. So that's all good. I'm going to embarrass myself now by actually briefly looking at my show report to make sure I don't actually miss things that I consider to be genuinely important.
Oh, that's a must, Ed, because when you do shows like Bristol or CES, you have to keep your memory over, because you see that much stuff and you know.
I mean, there was actually an AV product, singular. Optoma launched the UHZ55 4K projector with HDR10 and HLG, 3000 lumens of brightness and three HDMI 2.0 connectors. I had a brief demonstration of this, and on the understanding that I am not... I am as far removed from an expert in this as you can imagine, I thought it looked pretty decent for a £2,000 projector. And I'm hoping that it will be reviewed on the site, because I'll be interested to see how far adrift of that I actually turned out to be.
No, these machines are great. They're little laser projectors these days. You know, you can't go wrong at that kind of price point. I mean, you're not getting Sony and JVC levels of picture quality.
No. But you're not paying their money.
I don't think you're getting that, yeah. But you're not paying that type of money. You're not paying, you know, over £5,000. You're paying half of that or less. And these little projectors set up in a fairly dark room. Now, get yourself a screen. If you're ever going to get a projector, don't point it at a white wall.
Yeah.
You lose so much contrast. But absolutely, with a screen and one of these little projectors, they do a fantastic job. They look great. They really do.
It did look very decent. In terms of other things, both looking and sounding very decent, where's it gone? Wharfdale released the Super Denton, brilliant name for anything, a £995 three-way stand mount in retro aesthetic. And do you know what? It sounded genuinely lovely at the show. So I've asked to have a look at those. Hegel, which is not a brand that we've looked at up until this point, but I think we're going to change that, because they launched the 190V, £3,250. That sounded magnificent. And the connections on the back of it, it does an awful lot for your £3,250. So that was extremely impressive. And I fully intend to get one in as soon as I can get one. And the other thing, completely different, and I think it possibly falls outside the sort of thing that we might look at on the site because it's over £40,000. But Harbeth is not a company I normally associate with blistering cutting-edge modernity, but they brought along something called the NLE. It's called New Listing Experience, and it's essentially a very classic Harbeth design. It's a big stand mount, a big three-way stand mount, but it looks more 21st century than most Harbour things, but that's not the clever bit. The crossovers are outside the speakers, and it's a full, absolutely customizable DSP-based crossover system. It's so customizable that at the show, as I say, it's a three-way, and they were running it with Class D amps for the bass, larger quad valve monoblocks for the mid-range, and then smaller quad valve monoblocks for the treble. Now, all of those have got completely different gain ramps and all the rest of it. The DSP was working it all out, making sure that everything just went at the same rate and worked as a seamless set of speakers. It sounded magnificent. And then they were showing what you can do to customize the performance to respond to older, more bass light recordings and so on and so forth. It is, and you know, there's a group of Ute members on the forum who are very big into their DSP and their EQ. This is a tremendously expensive system. There's no getting around it. But my word, it is one of the most convincing demonstrations of it that I've had. Really very, very impressive indeed. If people listening to this would like me to try and stick my hand up and see if Harbour is prepared to send one, we can talk about it. It's a little bit outside where we'd normally go, but the technology is sufficiently interesting that there could well be an argument for it. So we'll see how that unfurls across the year. It's a real glimpse of the future from a company where, without any disrespect to what they do, they make sensational loudspeakers. I didn't think that this is where they would go, and neither did I think they would do it as well as they have. It was a real unexpected highlight of the show.
It is amazing when that happens, Ed. And it happens, you know, once a year at these types of shows. You will stumble across a product and you just think, wow, isn't that just something? Canvas Hi-Fi for me this year at CES, and I've actually got it in for review now. And I've been sitting blown away because it uses, you know, DSP signal processing, uses back 3D processing. Phenomenal what that is capable of doing just from a 55-inch wide, you know, fat-looking soundbar at the end of the day. Fantastic. So good to hear that, Ed. So was that everything we need to know?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, there's more items on the show report itself, and I've shot some ham-fisted video, which may or may not either accompany this bit of podcast, if for those who are watching, or we'll work it out, and if we turn it into a short. It's fair to say that there's a number of other products that I have, you know, got lined up for the site as a result of seeing them at Bristol, but it's not so much some of them. It's, you know, they've been a long time in gestation. We actually talked about them the year before and they're ready now. Other ones, I don't want to spoil the surprise. So we have got some other things coming. It should be a busy year. The one thing I will say, just the final point on Bristol, because I think it possibly, you know, if I'm doing semi-professional here, segues into where we're going for the next topic. In the last podcast, I was saying that we have an issue with the sort of middle bit of hi-fi and being under a bit of pressure from very affordable stuff being extremely good, and then to be meaningfully better, stuff is now a lot more expensive. I'm less worried about that. It must be said, having been to Bristol, and I've seen a number of new arrivals at price points, I thought, I don't know how you justify your existence in this point. I was pleasantly surprised by that. Hi-fi industry it's got a bit more gumption than it had a couple of years ago. It's finding answers to how you can create a meaningful upgrade path and a meaningful price escalation. So I'm less, and it's not to say that I think the issue's gone away or will go away, but there were certain solutions at the show that I thought, you know what, then that might work. So we'll see how we go on that.
No, and I think we're going to touch on that right now, because our next subject is, are you new to hi-fi, or do you have a big system and you're looking to downsize, or do you have a big home cinema and you're thinking now, you're thinking more about your living space and so on? Do you, downsize that to a two-channel system or something similar? And of course, Ed, we discussed this last time out, a lot of crossover products now. And
yes.
John, you'll see this happening as well.
Yeah.
A lot of products now coming on that, you know, you can connect your HDMI, ERC port to your TV, but you also have your turntable and streamers and all sorts, and you can actually build a really, really futuristic, or vinyl, or both together, system, and have something that you didn't have a few years ago, or options that you didn't have a few years ago. So when are we with hi-fi in 2024, John? You know, if somebody walks in and sees you on the shop floor at Peter Tyson these days and says, look, I'm interested in a hi-fi system, what's the first thing that comes out of your mouth these days?
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? It's asking questions to find out what a hi-fi system means to that person. Is it a stack of name separate things in a dedicated rack with ginormous speakers, or is it something they can plug the telly into? It's so broad now, but it's quite nice to see these changes coming, and this sort of the fact that these little systems, these all-in-one systems, are getting better and better. And to me, it's making that hi-fi sort of sound more accessible, and it's going to introduce more people into it, because you've still got that option to make it a full-time hobby. And for people who don't want a hobby and don't want the boxes and the cables, they've got the option to still enjoy really good sound, but have minimal boxes, minimal cables, or even no boxes and just a pair of speakers. I think it's fantastic. Some of the stuff I've been reviewing lately, like the Q Acoustics M40. Dead simple. It'd be nice if they had Wi-Fi streaming, but, you know, stick a WIM streamer on it or something. All the way up to the name Unity stuff, which has HDMI ARC. I'm just in the process of filming the Unity Nova PE. It's absolutely fantastic bit of kit. And it just shows how far up these one box systems can go, from quite really cheap from a WIM amplifier up to a name Unity Nova PE. And it's where do you cross over? It is what sort of person is going to go from one box, and what is it best to go one box, or is it best to go full separate?
So from your experience then, John, working on the shop floor sometimes, you know, what is the general trends that you're seeing in terms of hi-fi before we get into how people are building systems? What is the trend that you're seeing?
I tend to see that people who already have separates hi-fi will keep buying separates hi-fi. People who are new into it are often open. They will try an all-in-one. The small name units like the Atom HDMI, absolutely brilliant. You can stick a really decent pair of speakers on it and you've got a very, very good hi-fi. So it seems, it's all about asking the customer what they expect from the audio system. Some people are dead against boxes. Some people don't mind and want that traditional hi-fi. I think my advice would be, if you are looking to get into hi-fi and take it as a serious hobby, you consider yourself an audiophile, you see this being a long-term thing, I think long-term, it's probably better to go down that separates route, because you've got an upgrade path, you can upgrade components in sections, you're not tied to one box that will inevitably outdate at some point. If you don't care about that, it's not a hobby, you don't want that upgrade path, you don't want to sink a load of money into hi-fi, you just want something that's simple and small and sounds good, then an all-in-one system might be the path for you.
Yeah, cool. So let's get into the subject then, Ed. We've had what John's experiences with consumers and so on, but from your point of view, you get to play with all this stuff from 199 quid upwards, and some of the budget stuff that is really, really good. And you've just alluded to, you know, the budget stuff is so good nowadays.
Yes,
that the middle of the market's really, really struggling to compete.
Yeah. I mean, finding a compelling argument to buy a more expensive streamer than the current WIM Pro Plus. Basically, awesome. To meaningfully better that, I stand by what I've said in various reviews, that you really need to be looking at something like an Eversolo at £750 over the £220 the WIM. That is repeated in microcosm across all manner of bits of digital source equipment, and to a lesser extent, some amplification as well. One thing that is very, very interesting, and John touched on this, when you reach certain brands and certain price points, they essentially make all-in-one systems. But the one thing they won't do, because they actually want to sell them, is call them all-in-one systems.
Yeah.
You will find streaming amplifiers and smart amplifiers and things like that. And they're all in every single detail, they are all-in-one systems. I've got one at the moment from an American brand. It's £8,000 and it's a streaming amplifier, except it's not. It's a completely self-contained all-in-one system. But as they want to sell it to people, they call it a streaming amplifier. So all-in-ones actually find their way in all sorts of categories. You just don't know that they're there because they're not called that. NAD's another company that's particularly good at this. They don't make all-in-one systems. They make streaming amplifiers and so on and so forth. So even when And I completely agree with John instantly. If you do think you're in this for the long haul, in a small amount of additional outlay at the beginning buys you the means to change and evolve your system to suit your needs and budget in a way that the one-stops simply cannot do. But even allowing for that, you don't necessarily need to split everything into boxes in the way that it used to be. I mean, a classic case in point is the number of integrated amplifiers, which if, even if they don't have full streaming on board, they have a decent digital board on board, and you can stick a £90 WIM Mini on them to get cracking as the actual streaming front end, take an optical signal out, and it will get you up and running. And that allows you to put your money where it matters. Yes. The thing that's going to make this hard for people in shops, be it Peter Tyson's, be it another shop in the UK, is that if you are simply looking in the here and now, you're thinking, I just don't have that much money. The one stops are so compelling. The one area where I think I'm probably going to end up doing at least one set a month for this entire year, the powered speaker undertaking. You mentioned the Q Acoustics M40. That's a classic case in point. I've got the Triangle Boria. Yes. Updated version now with HDMI ARC and USB on it. £650. For £650, I can't build you a separate system for £650 that does as much as the Triangle as well as the Triangle does. To actually split those roles and responsibilities, even allowing for incredibly well-priced equipment like the WIM amp and stuff like that, is still going to end up costing more than £650. There's no getting around it. But if you have split it, your ability to change it in the future is tremendously simplified. If you've got the Triangle, you've got the Triangle. If you want to upgrade, you have to sell it and start again. Yes. It really depends on how you see the next few years going. And in the current climate, I fully understand when a number of people go, do you know what, I'd love to have that upgradability in the future, but here and now, right now, with my tanks of fuel costing umpteen pounds more than they used to and so on and so forth, I'm afraid I'm going to stick as it is. You aren't missing out in the immediate term. The level of performance they offer is sensational. All that you're thinking about is that future part.
And so let's split this into two camps then. We've identified two areas of the market. We've identified separates and taking it seriously and building a system over probably your lifetime. If that's your thing, if that's what you want to do, you've decided, maybe your 7.1 system's not for you anymore. You want to seriously get into two channel, or you're new to it and you think, I love my music so much, I want to go down that route. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. Let's come to the here and now. Like you say, somebody walking in or looking online, first of all, and they want a good audio system for the home. There's so much out there in terms of smart speakers and all the rest of it, but they want some quality hi-fi or some quality music. What are we telling them at this moment in time in the marketplace? What are the products they should be thinking about? And what is important at the minute in terms of sources? Because we'll get back to the Lynn philosophy, because I think it's an important philosophy. The source is important. What is it that you want to play first of all, and then how are we going to take care of that, Ed?
There is one thing that doesn't necessarily fit neatly into either of those points, but to me is absolutely vital to maximize your performance. If you have the space to do so, a system that is a genuine stereo system, where the sound comes from two distinct points, will almost exclusively outperform a system where the sound comes from a single point. No matter whether that is a stereo single box, it will still sound better if it has an actual degree of separation. It takes up a little bit more room. It's a little bit less elegant in terms of cabling. But if you can have a stereo pair of something, it's always, always going to sound better than the one box. This is no shade on the one box manufacturers. I've tested some superb ones. I'm not going to tell you for a second that a Neem Muso 2 or a Sonos Faber Omnia doesn't sound good, because it does. But if you can spend that much money on something which actually has two distinct points of sound, it's generally going to sound better still. If there's one thing that you can ensure that you don't compromise on to get a genuinely satisfying sound, for me, that's the one. If you can get something that actually works in stereo, you're going to get a better result out of it. You can't fight physics.
Yeah. It's an interesting one, Ed, because I hadn't actually considered that. I thought we were talking about, you know, two channel and so on. But you're right. There's a huge market out there. I mean, I've got one sitting behind me here. I've got it's an LG. They call it LG Boom. They really don't do themselves any favor calling it.
No, they don't.
I agree with that. Awful.
Absolutely brilliant. I don't know why they call it Boom. Downstairs, I've got something else. It's like a triangle powered speaker. It's got a 5-inch subwoofer at the bottom, but it's one single source of music. For background music, sounds great. Sounds fantastic. But I guess what we're talking about when we talk about hi-fi, high fidelity, we're actually taking the time to actually listen to the source, which is why I said the source, let's use that as the important point,
because
that's the whole point, I think, of hi-fi. It's not your background music. There's lots of product out there if you just want the background music that's absolutely superb, like the LG Boom. There's loads of other products out there that like that. A lot of these high-end hi-fi companies also make their one-box solutions as well. If that's what you want, then great. But I think just to narrow down what we're actually talking about here, when we say we're building a hi-fi system, we're talking about a source and two speakers or two points of sound. That's well pointed out. So coming back to my original point, Ed, where do we start with this? For that consumer who doesn't want to go down the separates route, is looking for a solution now that's going to get them, you know, really, really good quality, what's the source? What's the important source?
They need to be honest with themselves. Do they own any music? Let's face it, an awful lot of people don't. If you don't, you need to find something that supports the streaming service of your choice in a manner in which you are comfortable using it day in, day out. Do you want to attach a television? Most people do. If you do, I've said it before and I'll say it again, there is absolutely no performance difference between HDMI ARC and optical in stereo terms. Can be very clear about this. Multi-channel is a different fish. So all that you're doing is HDMI ARC just makes it much more convenient to live with. It, in terms of actually using it on a day-in, day-out basis, it's worth its weight and worth any increment in cost a dozen times over. So if you are going to be connecting your television, something with HDMI ARC, and, you know, just check that it plays nice with the brand of television that you own. For the most part, most wrinkles have been ironed out, but it's telling that my comparatively steam powered B8 LG OLED still occasionally doesn't get on very well with certain specific HDMI ARC implementations. And, you know, there will be televisions of that vintage out there. So just, if you can check it, do try and do so. But, you know, those are your core functionality in 2024. If you have your own music ripped to a NAS drive, you'll want that streaming platform to extend to an app which can navigate your music collection in a manner that doesn't make you cry. Now, some of that will come down to how well you actually put it on the drive in the first place. But there is a serious difference in terms of how apps work, down to how they were designed and who designed them. So I don't get too distracted, I'll do literally a 1-minute example. Certain apps use a cue-based function. So you press play on a track and it will add an indeterminate amount of music and it will just keep going. And if it stops that cue, it'll often shoot back to the start of the cue and start again. And it's all there in your history. Other ones behave like CD players. If you select an album, start track 3, it'll just play track 3 to the end, the rest of the album, then stop and wait for further instructions, which is, by my personal preference, what I prefer. But many people much prefer the cue system, where it will keep going, keep making noise until such time as you tell it not to. You've got to decide which one of those you want, because if you don't want a cue system and it has one, it will drive you spare. If you do want it to keep playing music no matter what, and it just stops every time it's reached the end of an album, that's going to annoy you as well. Even before you start listening to how things sound, what it looks like in your room and things like that, make sure that you can live with the functionality and it works exactly as how you want it to do so, because it's not a given that everything is the same. Even in 2024, there is a huge variation in how things work. Make sure, this is where John and his colleagues at Peter Tyson are worth their weight, because they will know all of these apps and they will be able to tell you what's going to work well for you and what isn't going to work well for you. I mean, to the extent where The Lin app and the Name app, you know, these are seriously expensive systems. They work in quite considerably different ways. And I'm team Name. I much prefer the Name app to the Lin app, but there are people whose opinions I don't disregard out of hand who are completely on the other side of it. It is as subjective as how they sound. Make sure that you have the functionality will be almost certainly streaming in 2024. There are some CD player and holdouts, and we'll deal with vinyl another time. But you've got to make sure that as well as having the spec it wants, you want, it works in the way that you want it to. Non-negotiable.
Okay. John, do you want to pick up any points?
That's a good point. And that, like you say, Ed, that's part of the advantage of going to a physical store and experiencing this for yourself.
Mm.
Get the app. Let the salesman or sales lady show you the app. Use it for yourself. Listen to your music. Try your stuff, because it's all very well and good. You're coming in and I'll play you some tracks that sound fabulous on a pair of speakers. But if you don't listen to that, you're not going to listen to my music at home. You're going to listen to yours.
Mm.
Listen to your stuff. Use the app yourself and see if you like it and how it works. That's a really good point by Ed. And just trying it yourself is the way to go. My sort of process when I was on sales was very much led by the customer. It was, how do you listen to your music now? What sort of system have you got? What room is it going in? With the three main sort of questions. And it'd be very much led by the customer. If a customer's got a big vinyl collection, they still like physical media, still like CDs, I'm going to lean more towards the separates route. If it's purely Spotify, separates may not be the best, but I will take them on that journey from an all-in-one, and this is the advantage of separates, and see where they lie. It's very much led by the customer for me, and I'll try and help them make the right decision and not make any wrong ones.
A bit, but do you get a case of people who come in and they have no opinion one way or the other? They're looking for guidance and so on. And if that's the case, taking on for where Ed is with the all-in-one systems, and they just want that quick hit, what journey are you actually taking them on, John? What is it that you're looking at and recommending to them?
I would show examples of both, I think. And it's like when you get up to, there is that crossover point in price. It's like the Sonos Faber Duettos come to mind. I think they're about £3,000-£3,500, which is a lot for a pair of active powered all-in-one speakers with ARC and all the rest of it. You can get a very good separate system for that sort of money. So that's where it becomes tricky on what that really comes down to customer preference and which one you want to do. Personally, I would lean separates, but I do absolutely adore the Sonos Favors. They're beautifully made. They sound good. So again, it's got to be led by what you want to see in your living room.
And there's absolutely no point lying to the dealer to impress them. You've got to then spend thousands of pounds and live with your bragging. So don't be honest. If you want to listen to high energy dance music, if it sounds magnificent listening to Blue Note Jazz albums, that's great. But if you then come home and don't play Blue Note Jazz albums on it, all you've done is sort of backed yourself into a corner. Be candid.
I think this is a subject for a future podcast, and look out for that podcast, because we are going to talk about, it was a sketch a number of years ago. Was it not the 9 o'clock news?
Yes, gramophone sketch.
Gramophone sketch.
And still a painfully accurate representation.
It's really Ed, because I don't spend a lot of time going into hi-fi dealers now and so on. But I think it's something we've got to come back to, because there is still that stigma attached to it. You know, if you don't know about the subject, are you being sold something you don't need and so on? And it'd be great to get John's input on that as well, and maybe some of his colleagues as well, and maybe speak to the industry at large. You know, what is it that, is it still such a male-dominated industry as well? And you know, when somebody's looking for a good hi-fi system, are they put off by traditional sales and so on? Is that why online's more appealing and so on? But some really good points made up to now. I guess just to wrap this one up and try and come to some conclusions at the end of the day. At the end of the day, it's down to you, what you want from your system, what it is that you want to, and we can only give you pointers towards that. But again, let's look at what the guys would actually do. So Ed, you're going out to buy a hi-fi these days.
Right.
Actually, I'm going to ask John first. John,
okay.
You're out to buy a hi-fi system these days. What's important to you? Is vinyl still important? Is the speaker to last you a lifetime. That used to be the way. It used to be a case
of buy your speaker first
and it lasts you a lifetime.
Yeah.
So what's your philosophy nowadays when it comes to hi-fi and what's important?
Okay. Well, I've sort of been through that process. Being with Bang & Olufsen for such a long time, and you go down that rabbit hole, and then suddenly getting to Peter Tyson's and seeing all these wonderful hi-fi brands and getting back into separates of where he used to be, because I started this hobby when I was 13, 14 with my dad and his separates hi-fi, and then you go to Bang & Olufsen and then you're back to this wide world of everything's changed. It's fantastic. So I've gone through that journey. For instance, as you can see on YouTube, behind me here is a Bang & Olufsen A9. That used to be the main system in my lounge. I live in a small cottage. That was the only thing in my lounge. My other half, she works for Bang & Olufsen. We get these things, and that was downstairs. Since working at Peter Tyson's, I now have Cyrus amplifier and a pair of Bowers & Wilkins 705s.
Mm.
And that, as an experience, is far superior to any all-in-one. So it comes back to what Ed was saying before. That's a much more pleasant experience for me, is having the proper two-channel. It cannot be matched. But for me, I purely stream. I did have a vinyl deck. I don't think it's vital, if it just personally for me. I did have a deck. I've had a couple of decks, normally older ones, and I've refurbished them, put a new cartridge on, new belt, cleaned them, and you'd listen to a few vinyls. But then I found I just never used it. And to me, the sound was never as good as digital. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Some people will swear by vinyl and that it sounds better. Great. If that's what you think, perfect. Fill your boots, play your vinyls. It's fantastic. I've just been building in the store, lucky to be building an LP1250 Sondek by Lynn. And I filmed it being built, and that video will be up soon anyway. But seeing the engineering that goes into that and the way it sounds with vinyl is absolutely beautiful. It's just not for me. I don't think it's vital. Objectively, vinyl does not sound better than digital.
Fight and talk.
I just don't think it does. It doesn't. Digital has a bigger dynamic range. It has a bigger differential between the two channels, what they can achieve. So they're, in theory, a wider stereo image. But we like the coloration of vinyl. We like that slight distortion, that slight warmth, the wow and the flutter and all that sort of stuff. It's an emotional attachment to the vinyl, to the music, to the deck, to the album art. And I totally get vinyl. It's just not for me. As from a practicality point of view, I don't use it. I never used it. My deck sat there collecting dust. Yeah. Mm. At the end, I took it away and I purely use streaming.
Yeah,
Ed may be foaming at the mouth now.
But I think this again, if you don't mind me asking, John, you know, if you were to put yourself in a demographic area in terms of your age, which sort of demographic area are you in?
I'm 42 now.
Okay.
So yeah, I grew up with separate. It was all separates.
Right.
It was a separate CD, tuner, cassette deck. It was everything was separates. When I was very little, I still have memories of my dad's reel-to-reel player stuck to the wall. Yeah. But yeah, Rotel, okay. I think it was.
Before we get Ed's view on this, I'm actually starting this journey. So, you know, I've now moved into a new house. I don't have a room I don't have a dedicated room that I'm going to use for a home cinema or anything like that. I've had that in the past. What happened was I had the dedicated room. I never used it. You know, it ended up being a workspace. I just did my work in there. I never used it for what its intended purpose was. And now I feel like I want to have a nice experience where I can walk in, sit down, and actually spend some time listening. Because I think we all live busy lives now. We all have background music on. Certainly when I'm, you know, writing or whatever, I've got Spotify on because it's nice and easy. I've got lots of Spotify Connect devices. If I'm listening to things in the background, that's what I use. But I'm going on this journey now where I actually want to sit down and listen. I want to get back into it. We do have, between myself and my partner, we do have vinyl collections that are tiny compared to what they used to be because I got rid of most of it. But again, I'm going back to a turntable. I want to have a turntable again. I used to work professionally with Technics 1200, so I want to get myself a nice Technics 1200, sit on top of a rack.
Nice.
I'm going to have a streaming side of it, because I want that convenience. But I also think when you're looking at like the Tidal and Cobuzz and so on, the quality is excellent as well. You can get really, really good quality from that. And I want a nice pair of speakers. And I just wanted to sit back, relax, put my smoking jacket on and my slippers and listen to some jazz. I'm joking there. I'm not into jazz. But you know what I mean. That's the kind of thing. So let's go, Ed. Ed, where are we? What are you building in terms of a hi-fi? What do you think is important these days?
Right. The first thing is, everyone's assuming I've been set up to vehemently disagree. If you do not own a single record in 2024, I urge you to think incredibly carefully before you go anywhere near embarking on trying to do so. I genuinely mean that. I love vinyl. I appreciate its flaws. I also have no difficulty in saying that because it is mechanical engineering, you need to throw a disproportionately large amount of money at the problem before it actually starts to sound halfway decent.
Yeah.
More importantly, the price of the records themselves is periodically heartbreaking.
I could not believe that side, Ed. I mean, it's been a long time since I've bought an LP. I bought one for my partner's birthday. I could not believe the price of £40.
It's insane.
Exactly. You have to make a very, very, you know, you have to be in this in a very determined way to start afresh. If I were doing this and I have, you know, all these records around me, then obviously I'd concentrate on a vinyl front end, and I would spend more on a vinyl front end than I would on a digital front end, because as we've covered, you can get an unbelievably talented digital front end for not a lot of money, but to get a respectable level of vinyl performance, I think the absolute bare minimum is £500 to £600 for something tolerable to listen to, and to actually start really experiencing any of the stuff that people like me prattle on about. Not much change from £2,000, and that is a lot of money. And then you've got to buy records on top of that. You have to be serious, and you have to budget and work out, is this really for me? And I won't judge you if you don't, because it's a tremendously expensive and space consuming and generally speaking neurotic pastime. If I had the media I have already, I would concentrate a significant chunk of my budget on the vinyl front end to do it. Going back to the question asked right at the start of this podcast, I'd be confident enough just pulling something out of the air. For example, partnering our product of the year last year, Auriga LX Mark IV, with our product of the year 2022, a Neat Petite Classic. So the LX is £1,300, the Neat is £2,000, for example. A proportion like that to me is going to work across a number of different brands perfectly well. I'd be spending a bit more on my speakers than I was on my amplifier in this day and age, but not massively disproportionately so. The other thing I would be doing, and you know, fair play to you if you make this decision, but I do not understand how you could possibly do it. I can understand buying a streamer online. Let's ignore what I've just been saying about apps and things like that. You can look at people using the apps on YouTube and go, oh, okay, that's fair enough. I do that. If you buy a pair of loudspeakers without listening to them first, you are deranged.
I agree with that. There's
absolutely no, I simply cannot get my head around that. Even two brilliantly engineered, measurement-based, engineering-focused designs can sound wildly different and present in a totally different way. It is utterly subjective. There are brands who make tremendous loudspeakers where, if it's my personal preference, I don't want to listen to them any longer than the review. And I will give those speakers a decent review because I have to review them and point out what's good about them. Are they for me? No. So you've got to listen to stuff like that. And I don't care how you do it, but if you're buying those things sight unseen, it's just a one-way ticket to swapping boxes and churning.
And this is the important thing, and I'm not just saying this because we've got John on from Peter Tyson. I think Peter Tyson are a good dealership. I've been at the demo facilities and so on. There are other dealers out there. This is not solely about Peter Tyson, but this is where finding yourself a good dealer pays dividends. You know, go and spend some time with the dealer, and if they're worth their salt, they will loan you the kit to take home. You narrow your list down to what it is that you want or what it is you think you want, A good dealer will. They'll take your credit card details.
Yeah, there's trust and there's trust.
Yeah.
Well, worth a sort. They're going to bring it round to you. They're going to set it up. They're going to give you a few days to think. You know, crack on, see what you think. If it's for you, great. We'll zap your card and transaction done. If not, let's see what else there is. And that's how you build your relationship with your dealer. But it's also how you then get to know what it is that you are actually looking for. And again, the number one thing that's going to change the sound in any system is your room.
Correct.
Doesn't matter how much money you throw at the problem, if the room's not good, it's never going to sound good. And again, that's another reason to build a relationship with a dealer and to have that. You know, we're lucky, me and Ed, because and John as well, because we get to take kit. We get kit here for a few weeks. We get to see how it performs in a space. We know our spaces because we've lived with them for such a long time. Mm. We know what's good and what's bad and so on. If you're just out there buying a system, it's not so easy. Take Ed's advice and listen to what Ed's saying in his reviews and so on. Go to the dealer, speak to John, see what he's saying, or any dealer around the country. They're all some really, really good dealers out there. And start building up, you know, your knowledge pool of what it is that you're actually looking for and what you can bring to it and what you can get from a dealer, what you can get from reviews in terms of pointers. You know, that's what we're here for. We're not here as reviewers to tell you what to buy. No. We're here to point out, these are great products. If you like this use case and this is what you're looking for, these products could fit that. Go have a look at them. Go search them out. Go find a dealer that's got them and so on. So sorry to jump in there, Ed, but I just thought that was a...
No, I'd say that we live in an age where you can buy all sorts of things. And if you live in far-flung corners of the UK, it's a lifesaver. And there are, of course, you know, you are protected and you have returns and so on and so forth. It just becomes a gigantic faff, though. If you have the opportunity to listen to the damn thing, and at least, you know, get hands on with it, see what it behaves, see how, and turntables are barely less guilty of this as well. You know, and also turntables really are something you want to get hands on with because, for example, I mean, choosing a brand at random here, VPI, I like VPI turntables. They sound magnificent. Could I live with a VPI turntable? Probably not. They're enormous, and the arm would give me would turn me into a sort of neuroses because it's permanently in a state of wobbly flux. So things like that, you want to try those things before you get anywhere near it. So that's the what. If there's one thing you take away from this podcast, it's that. But that's how I, you know, bringing this back. If I had the records, that's how I'd do it. If I didn't have the records, my God, it would sound basically the same as John's, if I'm honest. Yeah. So, you know, that's how it is in this day and age. Yeah. Just make sure that you're honest with yourself about, am I going to upgrade? How am I going to use it? Where is my music coming from? How much space do I have? And then if you answer those questions, both honestly to yourself and to your dealer, you will be seen right.
What Ed said, Phil, what Ed said about listening to your own stuff, use your own music. I've spent 45 minutes listening to flute music on £90,000 Biolab 90s before now, and it's fine. There will be no judgment in a good dealership of what you're listening to. And at the end of the day, you're taking it home and you're listening to your music. So in regards to what me or Ed or Phil or any dealer says, what sounds right to you, that's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
100%.
So hopefully we haven't confused you anymore in your journey to hi-fi. Hopefully we're giving some good pointers. And like I say, you know, there's lots of good content out there. There's loads of good dealers out there around the country and so on. Come and read the reviews at AV Forums. That'll give you some pointers as to, you know, what it is that you're looking for. And only you can know what it is that you're after. But then use that information. Go find a dealer that's close to you, and hopefully you can start to demonstrate some of these things, or get yourself along to a hi-fi show like Bristol, and there's a couple others that run in the UK. Don't jump in with both feet, because that's normally when you make expensive mistakes, is when you just jump in. Take your time, and we will guide you along in the next year anywhere here on the podcast. We're going to go into each of these subjects in a little bit more detail and touch on them in a little bit more detail. So we're going to look at turntables. We're going to look at streamers. We're going to look at speakers, and we're going to look at stand mounts versus form standards and what should you be looking for and all that kind of thing. So bookmark us, subscribe. We're going to cover all of these things going forward. Before we wrap up today, though, Ed's going to do his usual album, vinyl, and playlist of the month. Over to you, Ed.
Yes, we're over time, so I should be brief. Album of the month is tremendously silly, but tremendously enjoyable. A duo of electronic musicians called Chromeo, they released an album called Adult Contemporary. It sounds like every other Chromeo album. If you've never heard one before and you like it, all the other ones will give you a bit more of the same hit. Like all the other Chromeo albums, some tracks are blinding, some tracks are less blinding. On balance, it's thoroughly enjoyable and will pass a decent chunk of time. It's on all major streaming services. It's available on CD. There is a vinyl release, but it's incredibly hard to get hold of. So that's why it's the album of the month. Album of the month is a little bit different. I have continue to receive albums from an American organization called Vinyl Me Please for a very long time now. One of their, well, the February album of the month, but it would be available on the site if you joined, they re-released Fleetwood Mac by Fleetwood Mac. And this is an all analog remaster. It goes from the tape onto the record without any digital taking place at all. Now, to be clear, many records do have digital involved and they sound bloody marvellous. Nevertheless, this sounds absolutely brilliant. The chances are most people own it already, but if you don't, this is a tremendous way of getting hold of it. It's a nice black and white pressing. It looks very cool, but it sounds tremendous. I cannot tell you how good it sounds. I have an older copy of it, and I do genuinely think this one sounds better. If you don't want to join Vinyl Me Please, copies are turning up for sale on Discogs and eBay. I do warn you, they are not being given away. But if you don't want to go to the effort of joining, there are ways and means of securing the album. I'm not a monster. I'm not making you join these things. Playlist of the month. It's time for some dad rock, guys, because Cobuzz released the high-res masters of 70s rock. 100 tracks, 7 hours and 13 minutes of absolute dad rock brilliance. Will you like all 100 tracks? No. Will there be some tracks on there that you've heard? They may be guilty pleasures, but they're pleasures nonetheless. Oh, yes. Are there things that you've never heard before and you think, oh, that's good, and you'll disappear off into a disappear off down seeing what else the band did? That too. Can't recommend it highly enough. Is it cool? No. Do you want your friends to listen to you listening to it? Probably not. Do you want to listen to it? Yes, you do.
Excellent. I hate that we have to rush that. Hopefully,
no, it's fine. If you've got any questions, yeah. Anyone listens, if you've got any questions, just drop it into the podcast thread or, you know, find me. I do admit I'm not the best at getting back to messages on the forum because there's lots of them and it depends what else is going on in my life at the time. But if you drop a comment into the podcast thread, I'll always do my best to get back to you with that. Or if you have questions about review products and you drop a question in that, I will do my best to reply to that as well. So that's how you get hold of us.
We're going to do classic albums going ahead as well at some point. So we're going to find some of the music that we use when it comes to reviews, stuff that's been around for a number of years, and we'll give you some hints and tips and that kind of thing going forward. But we really need to wrap this one up. But before we do, just quickly on this point, John, anything that people should be listening to at the minute? What's on your playlist?
I use I don't venture often into new stuff. I grew up in my dad's music of Pink Floyd and Fleetwood Mac and ELO and all that sort of thing. I'm a big Foo Fighters fan. I like rock. I like stuff like Jean-Michel Jarre and Gorillaz. And I've got a bit of an eclectic taste, mate. Country music. I'm quite into country music at the minute. Okay. And that's the newest stuff I listen to is probably country music.
There's a lot of good stuff there.
Me and my partner, we're both kind of into country stuff. So, yeah, it's a bit of a good mix.
Yeah, so in future podcasts, you can obviously look forward to some of our recommendations and stuff to try on your systems as you're building them or as you're upgrading and so on. But that's it for this Hi-Fi podcast this month. Our next episode is the TV Display and Calibration podcast. It's coming up on the 11th of March. And the Home AV edition is coming up on Monday the 18th. And towards the end of the month, we also have the Movies podcast to look forward to as well. All of these podcasts will be available from 7 p.m. on the AV Forums podcast YouTube channel. And of course, it's also available audio only through usual podcast providers. And of course, like I say, every Monday of the year, you're going to be able to find another episode of the AV Forums podcast. Do tune in for that. Do all the cliched social media stuff, like subscribe, tick boxes, all that kind of thing. And of course, you can also buymeacoffee.com/AV Forums if you think we deserve a coffee between us. Then, you know, feel free to do that. And of course, Patreon as well. So AVForums.com, patreon.com/AV Forums. if you want to support us on a more regular basis. It really is appreciated. I'm Phil Hinton. Thank you very much for watching and listening. Washing? Have you been washing?
I haven't been washing.
Do wash if you listen to this.
Yeah. Yes, please do. But anyway, thanks for watching and listening. And we'll see you again soon. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.